Welcome to VFP Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English language VFP Stuttgart fan podcast where our views are unofficial, uninformed, and unprepared. But we're trying to be more informed as it is day two of our VFP Stuttgart Americana Holiday Hinrunda review. So what we're going to do in parts four, five, and six today is continue to chat with local American-based Stuttgart supporters and get their thoughts on the first half of the season. In part four, we're going to head to Maryland where frequent contributor Joe will explain how his loan from Barcelona to Stuttgart back in his FIFA playing days helped spark his love for the VFB. Then in part five, we'll head back to Michigan and talk with friend of the show Matt, who will explain as long as COVID can be kept at bay, the team will be fine in 2022. Before Matt can get in a word edgewise, though, Rob from Wisconsin will pop in, literally, and bring some much-needed positivity to the show and explain how, if we can just stay healthy, things will be okay, too. Finally, in part six, we'll leave America as Robin from Norway tells us via the written word how he and Sven Mislintop both traveled from Arsenal to Stuttgart at the same time. Interested? Well, listen and find out as we give our report cards, name team MVPs, and predict the future of the team's success heading into 2022. It's a lot, but thanks for joining. Here we go. Welcome to part four of our VFB Stuttgart Americana Holiday Hinrunda review, where we're going to talk to a bunch of American-based fans and kind of put in our two cents as to how the club is doing 3,000 or 4,000 miles away and see if that makes any difference. Joining me for part four is frequent question asker, Joe. Joe is from Maryland. Joe, how were your holidays?
It was great. Had family with, or had dinner with the family and yeah, just generally good holidays.
Yeah. I saw on Twitter though, you got a very particular Stuttgart gift though.
Yeah. Kevin Karani match worn jersey. It's quite nice. It's hanging on my wall right now behind me. So
you'll have to break that out for the next time they play for me, a little Karani good luck.
For sure.
When you go at first. All right, Joe, you can reach Joe at BLUTI_HAZ. So Bluti_Haze has. Sorry, has. screwed up already. Well, let's start this off like we've started off the other parts of it. We talked to Doug and we talked to Ted already and talked to Daniel a little bit. What is your origin story? What got you attached to the red and white, the club with the blue string? What made you a Stuttgart supporter?
So it's a bit unusual what drew me to Stuttgart. So essentially in a FIFA game in the mid 2010s, so like FIFA 15, FIFA 16, I started a career mode and I was playing for Barcelona, but since I wasn't good enough to play for Barcelona just yet, they sent me out on loan. And Stuttgart was the club that picked me up. But the thing is I've always just, I always knew Mario Gomez and, you know, players like that. Always took a liking to those kinds of players. So it just made sense that VfB was the club for me.
Nice. Well, hopefully, was your future career a solid one at Stuttgart then?
Absolutely. Bundesliga top scorer, top assists. We won the league.
I think we could use you now because we're not scoring too many goals right now.
I put in my resume. I put in my my highlights tape. So
Sven Mislintat, if you're listening to this podcast, what are you doing to get back to work? All right. No, that's great. I'm a fan of the league. What is it? One side Morecambe Shrimp. And my story is the exact same story as yours. I was looking for what was at the time the worst club in FIFA and it was Morecambe. And I took him to Champions League glory. So, and then since then I've been following him from afar and it's just amazing how that game has led to a lot of people branching out into sports and teams and countries that honestly they never would have done before. So
believe it or not, I actually did a career mode on Morecambe as well. Manager career mode where I brought them to the Champions League and won them the Premier League as well. So
this is just it's fortuitous. It's serendipity is what it is. It's going to happen.
Right. It was meant to be.
Speaking of meant to be, we go into the first half of the season. So let's start the Hinrunda review with you. And after the excitement of last season, we're all kind of excited going into this season, but as we all know, it hasn't gone quite according to plan. So in one word, what is the word you would use to describe the first half of Stuttgart's season thus far?
That's tough. I'd have to say hospital because of all of our injuries. But on a more serious note, unlucky, because I think our injuries are a pretty large factor as to why we're not, you know, where we were last season.
Yeah, I think unlucky is there too. It's just the number of guys that they brought in, like Chris Furich, who was coming in to be kind of the Nico Gonzalez replacement, more or less, day one, breaks his collarbone. And then Kalajic comes back for his first game, breaks his collarbone. And it's just been one thing after another for this club. Players come back, they start to play well. One of your favorite players, is Roberto Massimo. Mm-hmm. And what happens? Boom. He messes his ankle up. Right. So, yeah, I think unlucky is a pretty good word describe, the first half here, especially in terms of some of the results, too, that some of the other clubs around us that maybe we didn't expect to do as well are doing well. Augsburg beating Bayern. Who was it that just beat Dortmund? Hertha beating Dortmund. It's not just that we're unlucky. It's the other teams are being lucky, which is adding even more to.
Nothing has gone our way at all.
Right. So, and that could impact your report card for how you see, some of the teams, players breaking down. So we're going to break this down by position groups like we have before. And we're going to start off with the defense. So on a letter grade, A being the best you can do, F being, well, we're probably going back to the Zweite Liga. Where do you rank the defense?
Are we including Florian Müller in this?
You know what? We have to include Florian Müller.
Including Florian Müller, it's a D-, solid D-. It's a passing grade, but only just. But if we're not including Florian Müller, I'd give him a solid C. I think they've been other than Kempf, most of our defense has just been acceptable. And I think that's other than, set plays, of course.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, it's funny. You and I have chatted off the air about Florian Müller. And if you listen to the podcast at all, you know that Matt is
Florian's.
Yeah. He's not a huge fan either. So it's just, let me ask you this. You seem to have a pretty good take on different goalkeepers. It's not going to happen, number one. But if we just play the game, who would you replace Florian Müller with of goalies that are in the Bundesliga right now?
Of goalies in the Freiburg, the French guy, I forget his name. Is it Schmidt?
Yeah, there's Flecken, there's Schmidt.
Flecken, that's the one I'm looking for. Flecken, obviously Neuer. Mm-hmm. Or even Fabian Bredlow, one of our own. I like his style. He commands his box a little bit better than Florian. His distribution could use some work, but.
Yeah, I think we've talked ad nauseum on this podcast about how much we miss Gregor Kobel. The one, the player that I found interesting, there were some rumors during the summer, was Ortega out of Bielefeld. And he wasn't that expensive. I think it was like a $2 or $3 million price tag. And I was kind of surprised by how cheap that was, but goalies don't go for that much, to begin with. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of intrigued by Ortega. And it didn't happen. They went with Müller like they have, but yeah, his ball control, I like what you said, his command in the box just is lacking. And maybe that's something he can learn as time goes on, but all right. That's a pretty big swing. A D minus to a C with one player. So Florian, Florian, get your act together here.
I think that averages out to an F for Florian Müller.
Hopefully he's not listening for the podcast this week.
Look, I like Florian Müller. I think he can be good. I think he needs time to really get his grips at Stuttgart.
Yeah. It's interesting. As you say, the last goalkeeper that played for the German national team in the Olympics, I believe, was Timo Horn. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of a guy, he had a high ceiling at one point, but he's kind of just become a regular goalkeeper, which can be fine. And Florian Müller's kind of in that mold a little bit. Yeah. Hopefully he can bounce back a little bit the second half of the season. What about the midfield? What kind of grade? Now the midfield is tough. Everybody's kind of struggled with this one because for Stuttgart, I would say probably half the roster, maybe almost 60%, we'll have to count it, are considered midfielders, and they're not your classic center mids or whatever. They play all over the place. But if you're going to try to give this position group a grade, what would you try to give them?
I mean, for the first half, I've got to give them, a C plus to a B, because I think all things considered, we haven't actually had all of the four, like our four main midfielders, Sosa, Mangala, Endo, and Silas, all at the same time. It's always been three of the four or two of the four. So I think all things considered, I think that's our strongest group in terms of our you know, our ideal lineup, I think that's where our strongest players are. So I'm going to give him a B, all things considered.
Okay. So B minus for that, for the midfield. All right. So, all right, Joe, you're not all negative here. That's good to, see. You're giving some grades. No, I don't disagree with that. It'll be interesting to see once Silas is healthy and Sosa comes back from his back ailment, how those four operate together. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you let it off. This team has just been unlucky. When you have as many lineup changes as a squad has had, it's been tough to get any kind of communication or any kind of togetherness. And you see it on the pitch, you know, quite a bit. Speaking of things that we see on the pitch is our offense or lack thereof. What kind of grade are you going to give that group?
Are we including our defenders in that group?
No.
Ito and Mavropanos. No, you're not the case.
You're not including the top scorers.
No. Yeah, I mean, I think our offense definitely has potential, but it's not refined. I think it's a C.
See, all right. See, no, Brad. Yeah, it's tough because the one we've talked about this in a couple other segments is that Omar Marmoush is probably the only consistent player of that group, and he has his flaws, but he also has his benefits when he's in there. And it's interesting because a club like Stuttgart, there's only I think six pure attackers on the roster, and three of them have been hurt for most of the season: Silas, Kalajic, and Sanko. Which leaves Al-Ghadoui, which leaves, I can't remember, I believe I'm forgetting some of these guys, Marmoush and, right. So it's tough because there's just not that many of them. So, and they're not scoring a ton of goals and the defense is. So I think a C is a pretty, pretty decent grade for this group. It's just, it'll be interesting to see, like you and I have chatted, once the team gets back to health, where do some of these guys go? Because you would assume that a guy like Marmoush might not see as much time anymore. And he's been so key, pardon me, to having any kind of life, you know, the first half here. What about coaching? What about Monterazzo? Where do you put him?
You know, if I could break it down, I think in terms of tactical, I think his tactics are great. I think B+ would be a very good, a solid grade for that. His substitution pattern, I think we spoke about this before, is it's bizarre. It's just weird. It works sometimes, it doesn't work sometimes. So I guess you kind of have to go with C there, because it's hit or miss.
Yeah, so. I think that's fair. I mean, and everybody loves Monterazzo. I think there's very few people that are overly critical of him on Reddit or on Twitter that are overly critical. I think all of us love him. We kind of understand, you know, what this team is all about. It's youth, and it's giving the youth the chance to play. And nobody really does that in my fandom as well as he's done. It is interesting though, his second half substitutions a lot of times leave something to be desired, whether it's, I think Matt said this really well a couple podcasts ago, maybe it was the one about Cologne. It's that the substitution patterns seem to come, they're not always incorrect in terms of putting the players in as much as the timing of the substitution. And I think Matt said it really well, that everything seems about 10 minutes too late sometimes.
Right.
So
that's what I was thinking. And I think, the substitutions are the correct ones a lot of the time, but a lot of them are just too little too late and we're not scoring goals because of it.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And you're just asking, you're begging for some guy to get put in or pulled off. And
Right. Yeah,
I think C is pretty fair with that. That fits in with a lot of people, you know, have said here. So if we're handing out mid-season awards here, we're going to hit on MVP, offensive MVP and defensive MVP. Who are you giving the offensive MVP to?
Dinos Mavropanos.
I know, it's so sad, but
if we're talking about only attackers, I guess it has to be Marmoush. Every time he has the ball, he tends to run at the defense and cause trouble, similar to Koulibaly.
Right.
But, Dinos Mavropanos.
Yeah, that's not bad. What about if you were going strictly defense, what would you go MVP?
Dinos Mavropanos, but I think defensively, I think Ito has been really, really strong this season and is really, for value for money, he's one of our best players.
I think that's a great way to put it. And nobody's really talked about it that way yet, is the value for money. I mean, Dino probably value for money. What we're getting him Arsenal for is next to nothing. Ito was pretty much nothing. And I think that's why, and I've said it over and over again, that it's so important that this team survives this year for so many different reasons. But one reason is you can see what is working. And by playing all these youth players, they're getting experience, they're getting better. many of them, and it's going to pay off in the future, either on the pitch or in the bank account, you know, when you sell some of these guys. So if they can just get through this season, I think things are going to be pretty good for the future. Then, and whether it's an Ito, a Massimo, or a Dino, you know, this club is just letting them play and letting them get better and kind of show their stuff there. So I like, you know, I like that. Two defensive players for our MVPs, though.
Also, something interesting to note is that Dinos, I was looking at his transfer value on Transfermarkt. He's worth like 27 million or something like that. We're getting him for like 3 million. So it's free money, you know.
Oh my gosh.
You know, in the future.
Right. I mean, say what you will about the club and the struggles they're having, is, but the amount of young talent, I think they just put it out on the Stuttgart, you know, media team just put out on Twitter, you know, that they've won, I think, the most rookie of the month award since the award was created. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you just see it all the time with this club. And that's one of the things that makes it, you know, a lot of fun to watch, is they've got a lot of youth. They play a lot of exciting soccer. Hopefully we can get some exciting results here as well. Let's wrap up the midseason awards. Who is your player of the Hinrunda, your player of the first half?
The player for the first, I mean, it's Dinos Mavropanos.
It's starting to be a landslide.
I think one of our unsung heroes has been Endo. I think he's been a great captain. The way, you know, I'm not sure how his communication is, but his body language is always good. He's always fighting. Mm-hmm. He's always at least average.
Yeah.
When he's not average, he's doing well. So.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to somebody, and his rating on the Kicker website that does ratings isn't stellar. It's about average. But if you ask me,
his rating is a lot better. When you they've not watched a Stuttgart game this season. I'm sure.
Well, that's the thing. Anybody who's watched it agrees with you that the team does well when he does well. If he doesn't do well, the team doesn't have a chance. So he's just, whether it's him or Mangala that are the engine of this team, either way, Endo's crazy important to this team. Which match did you think was crazy important? Which match was the match of the first half for you?
You know, one of my favorite matches to watch was the Firth match, but I think one of the more important ones was the Wolfsburg win. I think it's sort of a good way to end the season, regardless of the, you know, the unfortunate loss to Köln.
Right.
But I think it was a very important one, and I think it had some good moments, especially that Dinos Mavropanos goal.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I think
what a goal.
Yeah.
You watch it.
Yeah. He just hit some screamers that, like I said, if I was a defender, I'd be scared with him coming down. But I think you're right on the Wolfsburg one. It's funny because they had a situation last year in the second half of the season in the Rückrunde where they lost like three or four in a row and they were safe. It wasn't like there was a question of relegation, but it was kind of a question of the style they were playing, whether the team was still kind of in it. And they ended up getting a win late, and I wish I could remember who the team was against, but it was just enough to kind of get that bounce back. And I agree with you. That Wolfsburg match was huge, even though the Cologne match was crazy disappointing. Those 3 points were big in the English Vaka, the English week, to just give us some, not breathing room necessarily, but show that, hey, we can still play with the big boys. We can still upset some teams, and we can still get some results. So, no, love your answer there. What is your moment of the Hinrunda? It doesn't have to be a play. It doesn't have to be a match. It could be even 3,000 miles away in Maryland. But was there a particular moment of the season for you that was just one of the top moments for you as a fan?
Well, I mean, I must say Marmoush's attempt at a penalty against his home club was just beautiful. I loved it. No, all jokes aside, I think Dinos Mavropanos, that goal against Wolfsburg on his birthday, that put a smile on my face. I still watched that goal like twice a day. It's lovely. I hope he doesn't stop scoring those, because I could be a happy Falafe fan forever.
Yeah, if he can just keeps putting a couple of those in every few matches, I think we'll all be good. Yeah, I liked your take on the Omar Marmoush goal, because I think there's something to be said about his relationship with that club, and I don't think it's fantastic.
He wants to be a Stuttgart player is what it looks like. That's what it looks like to me. But
no, it's interesting. He put out on Twitter a picture of him, and I don't know if it was his kids or just his family. They were all in Stuttgart kits, and somebody said the same thing you said, and somebody else said, well, if he was getting playing time at Wolfsburg, he'd be wearing Wolfsburg kits. well, he's not getting playing time at Wolfsburg. So right. we'll see how that goes for him. But yeah, that the two Dino screamers this year have just been things of beauty for sure. As we move into the second half of the season, so we all know the second half, the Rückrunde, as they call it in Germany, is going to be crazy important for the club. What kind of good luck do you do on your end to kind of help the club up, you know, from all the miles away? Do you have any pregame rituals, any good luck charms that you try to, I know you've got your Karani jersey now. What do you do to try to be, to send some good vibes their way?
You know, attempt not to listen to like all the negative stats that the announcers like to, you know, spew the, what's it called? The slander. I try to ignore that, but most importantly, I mean, I watch that Dinos Mavropanos goal against Wolfsburg like every day. Love it. No, I mean, all jokes. I don't really have a pregame ritual other than just, you know, don't wish any bad omens on Stuttgart. You know, avoid all the jinxing of the clubs.
It sounds like no luck sometimes might be the best luck. It's just right. Go out and do it. Well, the question I kind of skipped ahead because I was excited about your Karani kit that you got for Christmas is if you were handing out Christmas gifts. So you're handing out a Christmas gift to Stuttgart. It could be to Monterazzo, could be to Mislintat. What are you going to hand them? What are they going to open up underneath that Stuttgart Christmas tree that comes from Joe?
Now, I must say, does it have to be something that I own already that I'm giving to them, or can it be a particularly large sum of money that'll break us out of debt? I think
sometimes money is the best. No, if it's something that has to come from any of us, I'm pretty sure they're just going to return it unopened. So it could be anything that you would give them. So a big sack of cash.
Oh yeah. It would easily, well, I think it would be Lewandowski's contract. I think I'd just give him a bunch of money. My highlights tape from when I was a prime Stuttgart legend on FIFA.
I like it. Don't give up the dream. So
right.
You'll give them the money.
I'm not giving up on that. I'm a defender in real life. I mean,
all right. Well, you've seen enough Stuttgart games to know that being a defender doesn't stop you from scoring goals.
I mean, if I could be a top scorer from striker, I mean, I can do it in defense as well, you know?
You'll have to beat out Kemp and Dino now. So we'll see.
Well,
how that's going to go for you. What about players? So if we go to matches and players, is there a particular match in the second half that you got your eye on?
I'm looking at that second half Köln game because, you know, I'm tired of hearing you lose bets to Jeff. No, but see, I think that would be a good game. I think we'll get some redemption out of that. And we have a relatively good record playing against Köln. So, I mean, I think that's going to be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, and it's match day 34 too, so it potentially could be crazy important for
season deciding.
Right. So yeah, it's to me it's the Fürth match, which is the beginning of the book, and then the Cologne match at the end, which is the bookend. I agree with you there. That's could be crazy. Hopefully it's not. Hopefully we're 4 points up by then, and it doesn't matter one way or the other.
Hopefully we're at the top of the table.
But there you go. We've got. Bayern, we're coming for you, so watch out. What about the two-part question? Who do you think is going to be the most important player for the team in the second half, and then who do you think is going to be the most surprising player, a player that's kind of off the radar on the roster but could prove to be a difference maker? So two-part question: most important player and then a surprising player.
I think our most important player will it'll either be Sosa or Kalajic, particularly both of them, because they kind of both need each other really, but I think they can do very well. But I think I'm looking forward to seeing Chris Furrish. You know, I think that his goal against Augsburg, I believe it was,
right,
was, you know, great finish. He's got great on the ball ability. He's fast. He likes to put in a press. I like him. I think he'll be one of our unsung heroes by the end of the season.
I like that. Ted said the same thing earlier in part one of this segment. And the poor guy, he has been hurt so much. And if he can be healthy, I agree. I go back to something you said early in this segment. If the predicted lineup is what we all thought it was going to be, this is a scary club to play with Silas on the one side, Sosa on the other side, Kalajic in the middle, Furich doing his thing. He's looked great on the ball when he's healthy. I've come around on Roberto Massimo. You know, you and I have kind of chatted about him a bit. I really think he's developed nicely. Dino is just solid as can be. I think Anton is very solid. So I think there's a lot to look forward to if these guys are healthy. And I agree with you. Sosa, Sasa, and Furich are three key players for the team going forward. Absolutely. We speak of going forward, at the end of the day, the whole hope and the whole reason that we're doing this is that we want this team to survive. So give me a reason we'll survive. What is the main reason that when this is all said and done, Stuttgart is going to be planning for the 2022-2023 season in the first division?
You know, I think Mavropanos is a big reason we need to survive, because if we lose Mavropanos, Sven, he said it, we're buying him if we if we stay up. I think that's a big reason, but I think more importantly is generally things are looking in an upward trajectory when we have our players. So, you know, if Sasa Kalajic can stay fit for more than one game, you know, I'm praying he doesn't, you know, dislocate his other shoulder or something.
Right.
You know, if Silas can get back on the score sheet, you know, I think we'll be flying again. You know, we have a better squad on paper than last year, if you really think about it, other than Nico, and maybe Castro, but I think we've replaced those two relatively well.
I definitely don't think we're worse than last year. And that's, you know, definitely we get those guys back healthy. I agree with you that we'll start to stack up some points on the table. So let's talk about the table. Let's wrap up our segment here. Is where do you predict this team will finish on the table? Currently sitting in 16th place, but by match day 34, at the end of the whistle, where are they going to be?
Ninth. And I say that because Freiburg are going to have a massive downfall. Mm-hmm. That's just my prediction. I hope so. You know,
it's hard to disagree. I mean, they've punched above their weight so much. Yeah. This year. And it's a great story. It really is. But
no, I agree. But
at some point, you're right. Some of this stuff starts to average out after a little bit. And those big clubs always turn around at the end of the season. And I think Freiburg is one of those clubs. That's a great story. It's a Cinderella story, but I just don't know how they maintain that status for the long.
And to your point about, it all averaging out, you know, for us, like, you know, we can only have so much bad luck, and hopefully we've already had all of our bad luck right now. And then, you know, we have very minimal bad luck in the future, and hope that Freiburg have all the bad luck.
Yeah.
And Bayern and, you know, all the big ones, but, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's that idea that kind of like, as everybody was leaving 2020, everybody was like, well, thank God that year's over. There's no way 2021 can be worse. And well, here we are. So,
well, you know, if you read out 2021, it just says 2021. So, you know, they definitely defeat us. So, I mean, and then, well, not to mention we go into 2022 and it's just the second 2020. So, you know,
from your mouth to God's ears, Joe, let's do it. Right. Hey man, thanks so much for joining us on this episode. Hopefully we'll chat some more in the future. Yep. Loved your thoughts, loved your opinions on this stuff. And I love that you're not giving up the dream and you're still bothering to sign that kid from Maryland.
Yep.
All right, Joe. Hey, thanks again. And we'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Welcome back. We are now in part 5 of VfB Stuttgart Americana's Hinrunde Holiday Review. And joining us for part 5 is, I don't even know, Matt, if you're a guest anymore. I think for legal reasons, we haven't made you a co-host yet. I mean, I don't know where you want to fall on that spectrum there, but you're back again. So congrats.
I feel like I'm that neighbor that just randomly comes in through the back door and it's like, hey guys, and takes a beer out of your fridge and sits down.
Well, it could be fun because you and I were talking about this off the air, which I love saying that, by the way, because it sounds so professional, that one of our frequent, he's never been on the podcast before, but we chat with him all the time about, Stuttgart. Rob could randomly join us and make, would that be podcast history or at least a podcast disaster? What one of the two things here?
Probably the same at this point.
it's not much different at all. Right. All right, well, here we are for part 5. We just got done talking to Joe, had a great talk with him out in Maryland. And keeping with our theme, we're going to talk with Matt from Michigan. You can reach Matt at Sail Racer. He's been a frequent co-host, contributor, just friend of the show. Have we reached like friend status now? Is that fair? Okay.
I think that's good. I like friend of the show.
And Matt, for the first time though, we're going to ask you what your origin story is. You know, we've never put that on air, that which makes it sound kind of scary, but what is it that made you be a fan of one of the top 16 clubs in all of Germany?
Makes us sound so amazing when you put it that way.
It's all in the marketing.
Yeah. About 10 years ago, I started doing a little looking into like family origin history and stuff, as a lot of American people are want to do. And I'd always wanted to learn a second language, and I decided there's now all these great online tools for doing that, that I was going to buckle down and actually learn German because of my German heritage. And a friend of mine who's multilingual recommended that I pick a football team to follow because he knew I was a big soccer fan. So pick a team that'll help you get exposure to language, get some immersion. You can read some stuff in German. You can listen to some things in German, and it'll be stuff you're interested in, so it'll be easier to pay attention to. So I had to pick a team. I knew that the ancestors came from the Baden-Württemberg area. So I started looking around there. But really the requirements I put down for myself was a club with some history. The kits had to look cool so I could buy one and think it was cool. And I purposely ignored the current record and kind of the recent success, which is probably my fatal mistake. And then I also wanted a team that I could watch and kind of follow. So there were some third and fourth tier clubs that were interesting, had cool looking kits, but like that stuff's impossible to find over here.
Right.
So settled on Stuttgart, and that first season we were almost relegated. The second season we were almost relegated. The third season we were relegated, and it's been a fun roller coaster ever since.
The third time is indeed the charm. You know, it's kind of interesting because my story is somewhat similar to that, but mine came down to one of your factors was you had to be able to watch them. And the season that I started to pay attention to the Bundesliga was the year it came down to the last match and Freiburg was relegated. I believe Karlsruhe was in the second division already. And so for me, it was Stuttgart was the team that was easiest to follow. And they were relegated immediately after I became a fan. So my significance is much more different. But I wonder, had Freiburg survived that year, is there an alternative universe where Travis and Matt are talking about Freiburg as their teams, or
making fun of Austin for being a Stuttgart fan?
that would be rich, wouldn't it? Well, all right. Well, no, the kit, it's funny because the kit is iconic. I mean, I've talked to people in America who they have no idea what Stuttgart is. They don't know if it's a place, if it's a person, if it's whatever. But the kit, if you follow soccer in any form or fashion, the kit is known. And so it is kind of cool to have a club that maybe struggles a bit, but a club that is known, I would say worldwide, you know, simply because of the kit. And whether it's because they look like a bottle of Red Stripe, you know, beer, or if it's just they've had some amazing players through the years, it is kind of nice to have at least that iconic nature for your club.
You know? Yeah, for sure. And it's, you know, people, I was talking to my oldest teacher who's kind of newly getting into international soccer a few days ago. And one of the things he was talking about was how it's so weird to see sponsor logos on the kit, right, but how some of them, like Stuttgart's, and this all started because I sent my child to school in a Stuttgart shirt because I'm a horrible parent. but he was asking, he's like, so how does Mercedes fit in with the club? And then he's like, some of these teams, it looks like they're wearing a giant billboard on their chest, and some of them, like Stuttgart's, is just part of it, and you don't really notice.
No, that's great.
He also said, like, his son, he plays FIFA with his son, and his son's category for picking which team he's going to play is which one looks cool. He was like, and Stuttgart looks cool. He was like, they might not be great, but they look cool.
It is. You know, Andre Agassi in the 90s was right. Image is everything.
Well, it's look good, feel good, play good, right? I feel like we've got two of the three down.
We've got two of the three key parts. I'm not sure which is the most important part of the pyramid, but we got two of them. Well, speaking of playing, as we head into our Hinrunda review here, what is the one word you would use to describe Stuttgart's first half of the season? If you can narrow it down to one, what would it be?
COVID.
COVID. Yeah. You think COVID played more of an impact than anything else?
I think it did, because so my backup was going to be injuries, and I was thinking about it. And the reason I think COVID has had a bigger impact is because it's had guys in and out. Mm-hmm. And so the injuries, like Sasa went down, we knew he was out for an extended period. Silas went down, we knew he was out for a while. But with COVID, comes out of nowhere, guys out of the lineup for 2 weeks, comes back, he's a little rusty, things are a little janky, and people were in and out at random because of it. And then you get the ghost games, and just, I mean, it could have defined everybody's season. But I feel like COVID, on top of the injury woes we've already had, has been really pretty brutal to the club for the first half.
You bring up an interesting point too, because you could argue the biggest injury the club's faced was Kalajic's collarbone, which kept him out pretty much basically the entire first half. And the reason that he missed, if I'm not mistaken, is because of a COVID outbreak. Like he missed the first match, and then the first few weeks the preseason, I could lean into the regular season, because he was exposed.
Yeah.
And then he had to build his way back and came in late in that second match, I think, and fell apart. So yeah, I think COVID is actually probably a pretty accurate way to describe it, because without COVID, he's playing and who knows what happens.
Right.
You know, with him there. What about, this has been one of the fun parts for the people we've talked to, is kind of transitioning to the different position groups. And with Kalajic not being out there, the defense, as it turns out, has had to play on a much bigger and much more significant role. So we're doing the report card breakdown here. We're going to break it down by defense, midfield, offense, as it is, and coaching. What grade are you going to give the defense for the first half of this season?
Defense, I'm going to give a B-. I feel like they've largely been pretty okay. They've been carrying the offensive load on top of everything else, which sucks. They've had to transition with Hiroki Ito coming in, who was not supposed to see the field at all for the first team this year. So while they've got their problems, there's been some big opportunities they've given up. I feel pretty okay about the defense, so B-.
I was looking up the roster just to see, you know, who is who, just to make sure, you know, I knew what the heck was going on. And I've been saying that Clinton Mola was kind of the backup to Ito. If they did in fact sell Mark Oliver Kemp over the winter break and Ito then became the undisputed starter, then who would be his backup? But Clinton Mola is a midfielder on the official depth chart. So I'm curious, do they even have anybody outside of those four, Kemp, Anton, Dino, and Ito, to play in the back three?
I think Mola is kind of like Endo, where he's billed as a midfielder, but he's a midfield defender kind of combo player. And if I remember right, Mola was a defender before he came to us. Right. And then we brought him in and said, no, we want you to play a defensive midfield role.
Okay.
So I would imagine, you know, if they ship Kemp off, which, you know, fingers crossed, I feel like he's a giant distraction at this point.
Yeah.
Mola could be that fourth guy in the back row.
All right, let's move to the midfield then. This is a tough one, just simply because of the sheer numbers of how many of these guys on the roster are midfielders. And the way that Matarazzo plays, it's not like they're straight up traditional FIFA 4-4-2 type of midfield or whatever. Mm-hmm. What kind of grade are you giving this group?
I'm going to give the midfield a B. I feel like this is the strength of the team right now. Not missing Endo and Mangala turns out makes a huge difference. And with the defense, we're missing players from injury and have had some COVID stuff from the forwards are decimated by injury right now. But the midfield has not had that same issue. And so they've been a fairly consistent unit throughout the season, which I think makes a huge difference. And they're not dictating play like you want them to. But they're also not getting bossed around the center of the park either. So can't give them better than a B, but I feel like a B is fair.
Who do you think is a better? This is a tough question. I said it in a couple podcasts ago about trying to figure out like who is the most significant player for this team. And when you look at the midfield, many of us go to Endo or Mangala. Put you on the spot. Who do you think is the more significant player to the team's success?
I think Mangala. We saw last year when Mangala was out for 2 weeks, the ball movement in the midfield completely fell apart. Endo is definitely a better defensive player and is a huge help for especially running that three-man back line.
Right.
But Mangala is the guy, you get him the ball, he makes that one pass, gets open for the return. You know, he's the key to kind of unlocking a lot of stuff for us through the center.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Even Matarazzo said at some point that the fact that Endo is there allows Mangala to do many of the things he can do on the offense. Even in that Cologne match where it was a disappointing loss, some of his ball control and just his play on the ball is impressive. And I'm always surprised. I know why, because the team's not doing very well, why his kicker rating is generally pretty low. It's a little bit below average. I think a lot of that has to do with results and all that stuff, but he just looks good when he's out there. And like you said, the difference in this club when he's out there and not out there is pretty significant. Speaking of not being out there, what's your grade for the offense?
Given the offense a D, they are toothless and they are relying on the defense to do their job for them.
Yeah, it's tough because basically the offense is Omar Marmoush. If you look at the position group, it's one guy. They have six strikers. It's Omar Marmoush is it. And I mean, he is what he is, but yeah, that's that group has struggled a lot, but that's the group that could probably see the biggest improvement over the course of the second half. If you know, everybody's healthy and all that jazz.
And I think of the offense too, as also kind of our attacking midfield type mm-hmm. players. So the, you know, I stick Koulibaly in there.
Yeah.
you know, any of the guys that we're counting on to go up and create opportunities. Cause we do okay on the defensive end. We move well through the middle of the field. We get into the final third and it's like Marmoush gets the ball at his feet and he forgets what he's supposed to do. Or right. Koulibaly gets it and he decides to do something insane that doesn't work out. Or, you know, Firster gets it and he dribbles three times instead of shooting.
Yeah, it is a frightening breakaway when you see Koulibaly, Forster and Marmoush leading the breakaway, because you're like, all right, all these guys can run really fast, but unless they do like a weave basketball pattern in front of the goalie, I don't know how the ball is going to go in. And you saw that against Cologne a bit, and you saw that against Bayern a bit. So the guy who's kind of pulling all the strings to this is Pellegrino Matarazzo. What kind of grade are you giving him, the head coach?
I'm going to give Matarazzo a B+. I feel like it's kind of hard to really judge his job because of all the injuries and the COVID holdouts. His hands are really tied as far as lineups and changes go. And the last time we were talking, we were highly critical about the timing of his substitutions, which I think is totally fair, but kind of what do you do with the guys you have? And the big thing that I was thinking about with Matarazzo is, this is a classic case where this team could completely fall apart and totally self-destruct. And not only have they not done that, but they seem to be a coherent unit who is playing hard for each other, even if they aren't always entirely on the same page. Mm-hmm. There's no stories about unrest in the locker room. There's no chaos going on at the club. And I think we have to give Matarazzo a tip of the hat for that one.
Yeah, we've been supporters long enough to know that stuff when the locker room lawyers start to break out and start to negotiate with the coach, and how sadly you can see a team that after a goal down or whatever gives up. They don't have the same fight, the same attitude, and that's not the case with this team. Say what you will about the results, they do have fight, they do go for it, and you're just hoping that with a little bit of health, that fight and that going for it will turn into results and on the pitch, you know, going forward. It's been a tough.
There was a guy, so Luhuke, that was from like 7-8 years ago.
Yeah,
and he came in and everybody was like, okay, he's gonna play this fun brand of soccer and it'll be exciting. And the first time something went bad, everybody on the field like just completely bombed. Mm-hmm. And he never got the club back. And so I think the fact that Matarazzo's not done that is in itself kind of a victory.
Yeah, I remember Lou Hukka. He was had a ton of success. I think he managed to bring three different clubs out of the Zweite Liga into the Bundesliga. And so when they signed him on, everybody's like, yeah. And he lasted four games. And he basically walked away because he's like, I can't do this. And you're like, uh-oh. And luckily they were able to figure things out as the season went on. But yeah, you haven't seen that with this group. It's been a rough go, but you know, this is America. We hand out trophies to everybody. So who would your offensive and defensive MVP be, even though that we're in 16th place right now?
So I got that, but before we move to that real quick, I want to address the goaltenders because you skipped that one.
I did.
And I did. I'm giving our goalies a hard E because the rebound control is atrocious and it's led to several goals against already this season.
Yeah, well, unfortunately for you, the goalies count in the defense. So would that impact your defensive grade? Would you lower it from a B minus to something else?
Yeah, if we're going to include the goalies in there, we got to drop the defense down to a C.
That's a solid drop right there. Speaking of solid drops, Matt and I talked about this. Joining us in part two of part five, showing you why this is America's number one VfB Stuttgart podcast. Rob, thanks for showing up. How are you doing?
Oh, I was outside shoveling.
Wait, shoveling? What, dirt? Manure?
No, we were up north for Christmas, so we didn't get things moved, and there's still a nice layer of snow in front of the driveway, so I was chipping away at what was out there.
You know, we haven't had any snow in beautiful tropical Cleveland, so it's supposed to drop a little bit later tonight, but it's been, like I said, beautiful and tropical, so...
Yeah, we were white until we went up north, and then it snowed while we were up north, and so there's a line of snow in front of the driveway that got frozen solid, which is a good time to clean that out for the last.
Well, we're glad you have some priorities and you joined us, you know, on the podcast here. We've just finished up giving our grades for the defense, the offense, the midfield, the coaching. If you were going to give a grade to the team as a whole, what would your grade, Rob, be for the group?
We do it incomplete because we've never actually had the whole team on once.
I like it.
Is that an option as a teacher?
It's yes. Yes. As a professional educator, and I use one of those words very lightly. That is totally acceptable there. Yeah. I think incomplete works too. It's just, what do you think it's going to look like if you do get all the parts and pieces back?
I think it's middling. It feels like to me, like if we have everybody back, it should be better. I mean, I hope. Right.
You're right.
I don't want to go through the first half of the season again because it wasn't the most pleasant, but I got to feel bad for Matarazzo. You're trying to play and coach with folks you probably didn't expect to play anywhere near as much as they've had to. So yeah, to me, it's getting people back, getting people healthy, actually being able to have the same team that he wants on the field that the whole time. And I would hope that sticks us somewhere in the middle of the pack, which, given how crappy the first half of the season was, hopefully that means we don't get relegated.
The podcast just took a really uplifting moment when Rob showed up here.
Thanks for bringing the positivity, Rob.
That's right.
That's what I'm here for.
Rainbows.
Well, no, I don't think we end up relegated. I really don't. I'm not that negative. But I do. The injuries have just sucked.
Yeah,
it's terrible. Oh, every single week, it seems like someone new is broken.
Yeah,
and we have fun because of that.
Well, let me say before we move on, because we're going to move on to the offensive and defensive MVPs, which is kind of a misnomer, offensive MVP for this team. But you mentioned Pellegrino Matarazzo, and Matt just gave him a B+. What kind of grade would you give him if you were doing the report card here for Pellegrino?
I'd go with a C. There are times when you feel like he feels like he plans things out to the point of where, okay, it's 60 minutes. Now I'm doing what I decided I was going to do it, you know, beforehand. You know, so it seems like the same set of subs happen each time, or this person gets subbed for that person. It doesn't feel like he's reacting sometimes. And then other times we go out and, you know, what he has done and has decided to do seems to work really, really well. So I don't know. Maybe he's still just finding his way. Needs to realize that he's got to adjust a little bit sometimes instead of instead of sticking to the exact game plan he's come up with, because it needs to, you know, change a little bit. But no, I'll give him a C. I mean, he's dealing with the fact that we've had the massive amount of injuries pretty successfully, right? We have still actually won a couple of games or have looked like we know, even the Bayern game where we got the score line doesn't feel like it was anywhere near as bad as it actually was, right?
Right.
That game looked decently close. And I also appreciate the fact that he's not just parking the bus all the time. At least if we're losing, it's kind of not, it's not crappy to watch most of the time where you just feel like, you know, oh no, here we are. We're sitting in the back waiting and defending for the entire game. We're going to get scored on eventually. It feels like he's actually taking it to teams instead, which is nice. I appreciate that, as opposed to the just sit back and get destroyed eventually when they finally break through.
Yeah, that was one of the things up until the Cologne match, I always thought there was a threat there somewhere. That was the first match I watched where I was like, it seems like we could play this match for 3-4 days. We're just not gonna score in that one. But every other one, you're right. There seemed to be a point where they were able to turn around, even if they were a man down, you know, and they had those two matches where they were able to pull points out of games in which they probably had no business doing that. And the team doesn't give up. The team has fight. The team plays aggressive and all that stuff. But the team, like you said, and Matt said, is just decimated with injuries. So let's get into, like, if you were going to hand out some awards here, let's start with a tough one. Matt, lead off with you. Who would be your offensive MVP for this team?
Dino Mavropanos.
Oh, man. Someone's stealing my thunder there. I was going to go the same direction.
Yeah. Well, I got bad news for both of you. This is a part 5 or 6, and every single person is Dino Mavropanos. So you guys, I don't want to tell you you're not special, but.
But if we take Dino aside, it's hard to give it to like Marmoush or Koulibaly, or any of our others. So, you know, attacking quote unquote players. I guess Borna Sosa, because Sosa's still putting in crosses. He had that ridiculous short range goal a couple weeks ago. But yeah, I mean, Dino's your leading scorer, and so it's hard not to give it to him, especially on a team that relies on their defense to put the goals in the net as well as keep them out.
Yeah. Rob, agree with that?
Yeah, I think you kind of have to. And it's been really frustrating because our offensive generation shouldn't come from a center back. that right there just goes to show you how much the team misses Sasha not being there. Misses, you know, Furic was out for a while after seeming to start to provide an offensive spark for a bit when he first came in. And you watch passes come into Förster and then they just go over the net really badly. It makes me feel like we're watching Harnik up there again at times. Ooh. You know, he's like the reincarnation of that sky ball.
Yeah, everybody pull out the bingo card.
You know, so Gadoui hasn't in any way been the answer to, you know, Kalajic being out. It's just frustrating to watch that's the guy where our offensive firepower comes from. And you look at who's next in the goals. It's Kempf. Why do we have two defenders scoring our top two goal counts? It hurts. There's other guys that should have filled that role in that just simply haven't. And that's, I honestly think, part of the reason why we're doing as poorly as we have. No offense means no wins. Simple as that, right? So, I have to go with Mavropanos. He's the only one that scored goals that I can – like distinctly, oh yeah, that one. I remember that goal, you know. and they've been, he's had pretty goals too. I mean, the last one he scored was just a rocket.
Yeah, I just got done talking with Joe, who's in the earlier segment in this podcast. And he said he wakes up every morning and he turns on the Dino goal against Wolfsburg just to get his day going.
In the last 5 years, I have not considered starting my day off with a Stuttgart highlight a positive way to start the day, it seems. But, you know, it's all right. Makes sense.
To each their own. Well, all right, maybe this one will be a little bit difficult, more difficult then. What about defensive MVP? Rob, let's start with you. Who you got for defensive MVP?
Actually playing defense? Anton's been fantastic when he's been in. Mm-hmm. He has stood up. It feels like he should be a younger guy, but he's not. He's 25. I don't know. For some reason, I always think he's a younger guy than he actually is. But I think he's stood up. He's played real well when he's in there. But he's been out hurt too, or was out with COVID for a while, right?
Right.
So, again, our number one defender is whoever's healthy for the week. But no, I think Anton's played well. I like the way he's done. What I've been, can we go disappointing as well? Is it okay to go that angle?
Oh, right? Man, look at negative.
Are you gonna ask negatives already?
Kemp's? All right, we'll do least MVP in a second. We'll literally derailed the pod anyway. So we'll
Sorry. Kemp's been super frustrating. I don't know what happened to him this year after being a stand-up guy for the last few years and captain, you know, the year before. I feel like he's just what's going on there?
Feels kind of like Kemp checked his magic eight ball and said, do I want to stay at Shookart? And shook it, and it says results say no. Went, all right, time to be a shithead.
Yeah.
Well, yep. Matt, let's go to you. If we're talking, let's get both of those in there. Let's do MVP and LVP, least valuable player. What do you got?
At least whoever's in goal.
Oh.
I've been in this. This comes from being a former defender and just that, you know, it says as much about me as it does about the team, but just our goaltending has been bad and it's not giving our defense any help. And, you know, we don't need a superstar back there, but we need somebody who's going to be reliable and consistent. We've not gotten that at all.
What about MVP?
MVP, I'm going with Hiroki Ito.
All right.
He was not supposed to be on the first team. Had a little bit of a rough start, but now he looks very much at home. Matarazzo's even deployed him to the midfield a little bit, so he's capable of playing out of position. Scored that laser beam of a goal. That was just so much fun to watch. And it's just, he's been one of the real bright spots of the season to me. It's fun to watch somebody come in and overperform and just do it joyfully. And he's clearly having a lot of fun out there.
Yeah, it's nice to see Ito, especially somebody who wasn't expected to make a difference. And it kind of, like we talked about earlier, if Kemp is on his way out one way or the other, whether it's to the bench or whether it's to Hertha, at least we've got a guy there who seems to be capable and seems to be. My thing with Kemp has always been, he's a solid Bundesliga player. You can't take that away from him at all.
Yeah, I agree.
He reminds me of some of the clubs that I pay attention to, Cologne and Freiburg. There's a player, Dominik Heinz, who was a solid, serviceable, I believe, right back for a number of years. And I think he just signed with Union Berlin, but he's a guy. He's not special. He's not for every good play he makes, there's a mistake there too. And I think Kemp is probably better than that. I think we've just seen so much of him that we're a little sour on him. And as fans, when a player says, hey, we don't need you anymore, it's hard not to take that a little bit personal, as he's, you know, doing the same to his, he did the same thing to Freiburg when he was there. He said, listen, I'm going to control my own destiny. He's doing it to us. So it's nice to have Ito there, who, if nothing else, I think Ito will develop into a guy, and that's what Kemp is. And the difference to me is Ito wants to be here. And I think there's that intangible quality that on match day, that's the difference between an Ito and a Kemp, is you have one guy whose heart and soul is totally into the club, and another guy for totally professional reasons, and that's totally fine, is not. And I've seen enough Stuttgart over the years to where I think that can make a small difference on match day. So if it's a choice between Ito and Kemp, at this point, it's Ito.
I have no problem with him starting over Kemp. Why would you at this point start the guy that feels like he doesn't even want to be out there when he's out on the field versus the young guy that's clearly up and coming?
Right.
And I'm all for that.
Yeah. We've all seen this with the Benjamin Pavard story, you know, a while ago, who was a significantly better player, I think, than Mark Oliver Kemp. But we saw how that went when we were relegated the previous time there. What about for you guys? Was there a particular match of the first half that stood out to you, whether it was good or bad, that stuck in your memory? Rob, start with you. Any particular game that you watched or match that you watched that just for you was the match of the Hinrunde?
if we want to talk about just the way the whole round felt, I think the Bayern match is perfect again. You're in a game, you look like you're in a game, and then you give up a goal and boom, it's bad. And it's real bad. You know, it feels like we're in a lot of games like that, but we can't score. And then we have possession. We're playing well. We're taking it to whoever the other team is. We're defending well. And we just can't get that goal to go up. Mm-hmm. And the Bayern game is a perfect example of that, I think, right? It really did feel like, holy crap, are we going to have another game against Bayern where we, you know, actually win for some reason, even though we have managed to not do that, you know, across the board? And nope, you lose that one goal and it goes downhill from there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Köln game felt similar to that, right? Pressure, 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 but no goal again. And how often has that happened where, right, we have possession, we look like the better team, but because we have, you know, two goalies leading our team in scoring, or two defenders leading our team in scoring, the guys up front just can't get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, I mean, that's to be expected when you're missing half of what you're, who you're expecting to be your attacking guys. Having Sivas out and having, you know, Kalajic out, it clearly shows that we're having trouble putting the ball in the net. But those two guys were, you know, a vast majority of our production last year.
Yeah, I think in that Bayern match too, there was two specific chances. I think one was Klimovic and one was Forster right at the end. And they didn't even get decent shots off in those particular chances. Yeah. But you're right. The first 65, 68 minutes of that match, you were playing eye to eye with the best team in the world, basically. And then the final score, my buddies at work were like, whoa, another blowout.
Like, no, it wasn't right, that it wasn't, bad. No. Okay, it's 5-0, but it doesn't. It really wasn't that bad.
Yeah, Matt, what about you? Anything?
Kind of similar. I'm going to say the game against Dortmund, because we lost, but we never looked like we were out of it. And really, Dortmund went up to start the second half, and then about 10 minutes later, we scored the equalize, and we were 1-1 until like almost the 90th minute.
Yep.
And it felt like for stretches, we were out playing Dortmund, which is an accomplishment, I think, for our club, especially this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they looked good in that one. And then it was another 85th minute. You know, anything after the 85th minute, kind of a letdown there. What about a moment? And let's make this a pop. Was there a positive moment of the first half of the season? It didn't have to be a match. It could have been a substitution. It could have been a particular play, but Matt, we'll start with you. Was there a particular moment of the first half that really sticks out to you in a positive sense?
I won't be that negative on this one. I promise. I got a positive one.
I got a couple that really stick out. The biggest one probably is Sivas just making a return. That was just such a huge emotional lift. The fans in the stadium were so nuts. The whole team was going crazy seeing him back on the field. But I can't be the only one that said that one. So I won't wax poetic on Sivas. I think seeing Ito get his goal would be the second one that really stood out, because he seemed as surprised as anybody that it went in. But it was a great shot with some great build-up play. And it was just awesome to see this dude who's supposed to be playing down in the fourth division banging in a real solid first division goal after playing really, really well for a number of weeks.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that one. Rob, what about you?
I'll go with another guy's goal. And the other part that was great is after the game too, when Sosa scored against Mainz. I played wing when I was, you know, able to actually run all the way up and down the field without feeling like death in college myself, right? And there's every once in a while you're like, oh, I can actually score instead of crossing. I'll try to shoot on that. And it never goes well. It went real well for him, right? It went complete top shelf. Just a fantastic ball that took the goalie completely by surprise, because you are expecting a winger in that position to put the ball across the middle. Even if, you know, there's not a lot of people in there for him to go after, he doesn't have, you know, Kalajic in the middle. I don't think El Gadoui was in the middle on that one for him to cross. So I don't remember who was actually in the middle. It wasn't a lot, right? But he just smashes it top shelf, buries it. And then after the game, I don't know if you guys actually saw this or not, but after the game, while he's getting interviewed about it, Kalajic comes up and interrupts him and basically says he totally meant to shoot that, something along the lines of just giving him a bunch of crap that there's no way that was actually actually supposed to be a shot. He mishit it, basically, was giving him crap. It's pretty funny to see him just jump in and interrupt it. So those guys, not only do they, you know, combine for a whole bunch of goals, but they appear to, like, be good friends as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing Kolasinac come back, but seeing Sosa finally have, you know, that bit of success and put a goal in himself. I think it's his first goal he scored for Stuttgart. I don't think he's had any other goals beside that one.
No, you're correct. That was it.
Yeah, that was awesome. It was fantastic to see. And like I said, as someone who used to play wing, it's great to see someone score from that position.
No, that was a great moment to do that. And then what is it on Twitter? Sometimes they'll call it the sports freund or the sports friends, Sosa and Sasha. Sure. And it does seem, this goes back to something Matt said earlier, seems like despite the troubles this club is having, there does seem to be a cohesiveness that's deeper than you know, what's happening on the field. And at the end of the day, it's the results that matter. But when you're struggling through what they're struggling through, you know, some people did mention the one, Matt, that you mentioned, the Silas, when he came back, and just the
that was awesome.
The genuine feeling of emotion from the fans, from the crowd. You know, that doesn't happen for everybody. You know, I'm a Cleveland Browns fan, and you watch Baker Mayfield after the games. And it's traditional in America, right? You, after the game, you go shake hands, and everybody's like, hey, great game, Baker, great game, you know, Tom, whatever. Nobody shakes the guy's hand. Next time you guys are lucky enough to watch a nationally televised Browns game, you're welcome, America, number one. But number two, watch what happens at the end of the game. And it just, not to compare the two clubs, but there does seem to be a sense of cohesiveness and something a little bit deeper on Stuttgart, which they're going to need, you know, as the second half, you know, goes through. Because, you know, we just had Christmas, we just had the holidays, you know, we just were opening gifts under the trees. So one of the things we're asking everybody is, and Rob, we'll start with you. If you were going to give a gift to Pellegrino or to Sven, and they were going to open it under the tree, what would be the Christmas gift that you would, they would unwrap from Rob?
A consistent partner for Endo. Somebody Endo can work with in the midfield, and expect them to be there to be the partner to his defensive bulldogishness, right? If that's even a word, I'm going with it anyway. You know, a partner of the work he does, that once he wins the ball back, he has someone he knows he can transition to immediately and start to work the ball upfield. It would be fantastic to see us do that. We have so many other folks that end up trying to be in that spot, and it never seems to click as well as it should. Mangala has been there a little bit this year, but he's been hurt too, because that's what we do, right? So maybe Mangala is that answer at some point, but it would be nice to see him just have someone that can be as consistent on the defensive midfield or in the offensive midfield as Endo has been in the defensive midfield. And some actual stability there would be awesome. I would love to see that. And, you know, just healthy players.
Well, you only get one gift there, Rob.
Sorry, that's a smaller one. That's in the stocking off of the side.
Matt, Rob's trying to take all the gifts. What about you?
Cases and cases of N95 masks.
So we got help. And
to just a little bonus one. I saw a thing on a German Twitter feed a couple weeks ago of people wearing these hats that they made out of pool noodles to stick the noodles out to the side. They called them social distancing hats. So let's get some N95s and some social distancing hats and keep everybody COVID free and hopefully injury free for the second half.
All right. So our gifts are some help for Endo and some help for COVID. So those are the two things we got heading.
Yeah.
Heading over to Stuttgart there. All right, so as we move into the second half of the season, so the club stands in 16th place on the table, would be currently playing Hamburg if the season ended, but luckily the season's not over. So as we move into the second half, let's talk about some of the stuff we're looking forward to. But before we do that, we all know that as supporters, we play a huge role in the game day success of the club. So Rob, are there any pre-game rituals you do that have just proven to bring success thousands of miles away?
Well, I'm glad the games that were in the first Bundesliga, and now they're actually not as late, which is always a relief compared to the you know, in the second Bundesliga, where it was, oh man, this is way too early to be getting up. And I don't know, I'm only in Central Time Zone, so there's probably guys on the West Coast, or when you're out in California, you know, you're 2 hours behind me. Mm-hmm. No, my big thing is get up, make some form of coffee or tea, so that I have something to actually drink that's warm and hot to kind of, you know, break away from the I just woke up problem. And then I generally sit on the couch and make the dog angry by yelling. She's not a big fan of any type of shouting in relation to sports games, whether it be hockey or soccer. Doesn't care for it too much. So a lot of it is watching the game while standing at the door, watching her doing something outside because I've gotten her all riled up by talking to the TV in a forceful manner.
It's like a Disney cartoon of some sort. Rob with his cartoon animals.
Yeah, watching on the iPad is sometimes better than watching on the TV because I can carry it around as I do breakfast stuff too. I will actually cook while watching the game. If it's been not a good one, I'll cook, you know, like the breakfast eggs or whatever.
All right.
By using the iPad to walk around. So it's fantastic after all these years of struggling to watch Stuttgart to have a consistent platform to see it on as a foreign fan. Mm-hmm. It is actually pretty amazing.
For those of you that don't know, Rob is 7 hours behind German time.
Yeah, I'm in Central time, not Central European time, which is a thing too.
Yeah, I'm 6 hours. Matt, you're 6 hours too.
Six.
Okay.
Yeah, you guys are in normal time. I'm in cow time, is what we call it. after moving south from where I grew up, this is the state of Wisconsin, which is all about cows, and we'd always call it cow time when we came south down here.
We appreciate your tasty dairy, so thank you for that.
Well, you have the happy cows from California.
Well, that's true. That's true. California is somewhat on fire, though, so I don't know how happy they are right now. Matt, what about you? Good luck rituals you do?
I try and find something red to wear, which is a Michigan fan and somebody who lives in Ann Arbor. There's not a lot of red since that's the despised Ohio State colors. But I've got some Stuttgart gear, and I've got a couple pairs of black socks that have red rings around them. And so I try and wear those. They're my lucky socks, except when they don't work.
Yeah. Rob, in case you don't know, it's we put Matt on a kind of hiatus. We tried to stop him from bringing up Michigan during the podcast.
Oh, but, sure.
Every time he does, he has to put a quarter in a jar. So the jar's getting pretty full right now.
I showed up in somewhat maize-ish colors, I guess. I apologize for that.
But you had plaid on, so it all works out. But what about
a terrible place? I don't like it anyways.
Oh boy, here we go.
I promise not to derail in that way though. There's my one comment.
if either of you start using the word hockey on the podcast, I'm kicking you both off.
Right? I already said it once. I got it in once.
I edited out the entire episode.
Travis, you don't edit.
I know. Joke's on you, listener. All right. What about match? Is there any match 18 through 34, Matt, you're looking forward to more than any other?
I think really anything against Union, Freiburg, Köln, any of the teams that are solid mid-table teams that we should be neck and neck with, kind of our peer clubs. I'm looking for a fully armed and operational Stuttgart team with Kalajic back and Furish and Silas to be able to do some damage. I'm really curious how we stack up against those teams. I don't care if Bayern curb stomps us. I want to see how we hold up against the guys that we should
use
be.
That word, if.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's funny though, and Matt's mentioned those teams, and I don't disagree, the Unions and the Freiburgs and the Colons, but all those teams are like top, what, 9-7 teams or something like that. So the table's a little bit wonky right now. Rob, what about you? What match, is there a particular match you're looking forward to?
Your segue there is perfect. The table is nuts. I think it's the only way to put it. I mean, you're looking at even six is only on 27, 10 points up, right? So we've got 17. You win one game and that jumps you up into 12th.
It's crazy.
The middle of the table is super, super tight. And if we can actually put together a series of results, our goal difference isn't anywhere near as bad as it could be even after the 5-0. You take that 5-0 against Bayern now, we're only at -4, mm-hmm. which is way better than anyone from 11th on down has going for them, besides Augsburg has the same as us, right? So right. I'm really surprised to see some of the teams that are down there with us. Like, You know, Gladbach has been a decent team that's been, you know, it seems to have been better, that's struggling this year. Wolfsburg is down there. Leipzig is down there, which is really strange, you know, to see who's there. So the biggest thing we have to do is actually perform against Fürth and Bielefeld. Mm-hmm. I want to see us go out and actually take those games that are against the other folks near the bottom of the table and win them convincingly, instead of the struggle we have. And outside of Stuttgart games, what the hell is going on with teams like Bielefeld and Fürth being able to pick off teams that are way above us? That is, stop doing that, other Bundesliga teams. It's not nice.
My biggest thing is I really don't care about much other. It's just, we have to take care of the four or five teams around us. I think
exactly.
You've got to beat Fürth. You've got to beat Bielefeld. You've got to beat Augsburg. Those are the teams you have to get points against. And if you don't get points against them, which we really outside of Fürth haven't, then you're in the trouble you're in. So yep. For me, yeah, I agree. I just think it's those clubs that are at the bottom six. Those are the ones we got to get something against, because those are ones you're going to be competing against all season long. But to do that, we're going to need some players to step up. So Rob, who is your most important player at the second half? Who do you think is going to play the key for this team in the next 17 matches?
I think Silas. Him coming back and actually providing some of that, you know, drive and spark to get the offense going is going to be super important. I think just getting the offense clicking again is the key to success in the second half of the season. So I'm really hoping to see that, see him come back, be healthy. You know, he's back from the injury. He's back from the one of the crazier stories I think we've ever seen in terms of why he was suspended, right? That whole thing. So hopefully he can bring back the spark he had last year and make the offense click again, because he's one of the big drivers of why we had so much success, you know, when he was going. So I'll go with Silas.
Right, Matt?
Silas, or I'll pick something different just to pick a different guy. Sasa. He's the target man for Sosa. Without him, Sosa's, you know, doing his thing, but nobody's out there to receive the crosses. Mm. So really anybody who can score goals.
Yeah, if it has to be Dino again, that's why I'm fine with that.
We could go back to the Kaminsky days where we put him up at striker. Right. And hope for the best there. Well, oh, speaking
please
of,
no.
Yeah, speaking of kind of surprises, though, that's kind of the next question here. Who, Matt, we'll start with you. Who is the surprise? Who would you predict is going to be the surprise player of the second half? He's on the roster, but not really on the radar right now. Somebody who you think is going to step up and is going to play a significant role for the second half of the season.
I think we're going to see a lot more of Furic. Might not be a huge surprise, but he was new coming in. And I just feel like what he can do with his speed and his tenacity matches really well with what Silas can do. And I can totally see those two guys just raining terror upon opposing defenses and opening up a lot of space for Sasa and Sosa to do what they do best.
Yeah, it's the little bit that he's been on the pitch, he's been impressive. But like Rob has said multiple times, he hasn't been on the pitch much because of injuries. So that could be a nice surprise. Rob, any surprise player you think will stand out in the second half?
I want to see Fagir play a little bit better up top too. I want to see him take off and deliver some of the promise he brought when he came in. He had the one goal, but since then there's not been much to speak of. He hasn't been out on the field much to get an opportunity too. So who knows what the reason for that is. But again, I'm hoping on the offensive side, because in all honesty, I think our D hasn't been bad, right? So I don't really need to see someone step up on the D side. We do kind of know where we are there, and it's been good. We just need someone up front to start reliably putting things in nets. So, yeah, my hope is Fagir starts to provide that as well.
Yeah,
I think he's a long-term option too, right? I don't want to say Mamouche is decent, but is he going to be around? He's just alone, right?
Right.
So
right.
I don't want to put too much weight on him. I'd love to see someone supplant him as being the starter that's providing that spark, as someone that we have that'll be around long-term. So, yeah, my hope is Fahir. I have no idea how you actually say his name, and I feel bad. I hate not knowing how to pronounce something.
Well, if you knew how to pronounce it, you wouldn't be on the podcast. So we have a certain standard to provide here that listeners have become used to. So All right, let's play a sentence game as we wrap this up. We got two more questions and we'll wrap this up. Rob, we'll start with you. Finish this sentence. The reason Valpy Stuttgart will survive the season and stay in the first league is?
Well, Borna Sosa's left foot.
Borna Sosa is the savior.
Yeah, I'll go with that. Someone in the middle's head and Borna Sosa's left foot.
Sounds like a movie. What about you, Matt?
I'm going to go with Matarazzo keeping the team from self-destructing and just turning into a complete black hole.
Do you think that's an actual thing that could happen?
I thought I was the positive one.
I know. Rob, your influence is significant.
I don't think they will, because if it was going to happen, I feel like it would have happened already with all the injuries, all the hardships the team's been through. Matarazzo has been able to successfully get them through that without the team turning into a hot mess.
I like the fact that we're in the thought that we're in the second half of a Mighty Ducks style movie now. That's way more promising to me. We're on the redemption arc part of the movie after the hardships. I can appreciate that, and I like that thought.
This Gordon Bombay is going to put on his varsity jacket. He's going to show up to practice, and it's going to make it happen.
If there's anything that makes me think successful hockey team, it's a guy named Estelio Esteban.
Rob's dog will stop barking at him, and everybody will be happy as we go. Well, let's end it with a happy note, all right? So this is the last question. Matt, we'll lead off with you, and then Rob will wrap up with you. Is prediction, final table finish, when all is said and done, when match 34 is over, Stuttgart, Matt, is going to be in what spot?
I'm going to put us at 10th. I think we'll be able to get into the middle of that tightly packed middle. I think a lot of teams are going to give each other problems up there, and we've got space to climb. And I think we're going to improve significantly. It's going to be like signing some big transfers with getting our players back from injury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not getting in new players that don't know the system. You're getting in guys that have played there already that should hopefully know things, be a part and able to gel. They're just coming back from being hurt. I'm not going to go as high as Matt. I'm not that positive.
Oh, shocker, everybody.
I'll go with 12. I think we're comfortably out of the relegation zone by the end of the year with players back and the team, you know, getting back to where they need to be. And with just how absolutely crazy that entire section of the Bundesliga is. You know, people talk about the Bundesliga being boring because Bayern's going to win it all. But what other leagues at this point are that stacked in terms of points? I mean, you only have a 9-point gap between 9th and 16th, 17th. So, you know, there's a lot of movement that can go on there. There's a lot of stuff that makes it more exciting to me than watching any type of sport that doesn't have promotion or relegation, because right, even though we are down there at the bottom, there's something to watch for. You're not just like, oh no, it's the Browns. They lost again. Shoot. You know,
it's a rather specific example. Well,
I could have gone with the Lions too. The Lions have been worse. I think they've got 2 wins now, right? The Lions actually managed to win and tie something, right?
They're trending.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, when your baseline is literally a baseline, it's tough to trend in any direction when it comes to the Lions.
They're a zombie football team.
Those are teams, both those teams, getting them relegated and out of the NFL would have made the NFL a more exciting league to allow someone to come up. And we unfortunately don't have that in most American sports, where that bottom makes a difference. Mm-hmm. You have the tanking for draft picks thing, which is just awful in and of itself. But the Bundesliga is exciting. You've got so much there that can happen at the bottom. I love, I don't know, someone on Reddit on our soccer post say what positions teams can move in based on results type thing. And it shows like a big graph of shrinking lines of where they can go and up and down, depending on, you know, what the results are for that week. And the Bundesliga always has this huge group that can swing, you know, in a lot of positions because of how tight things are right now. So it's exciting to watch. It's exciting to know that we're not the only historic team that's down there struggling in this way, right? You know, Berlin is not doing well. Leipzig's not doing well after, I don't want to even slightly conflate Leipzig and historic in any way, but from a last 5 years trend, they should not be where they are in any way. But they're down there in that fight as well right now. So everybody's got a relatively clean slate to start the second half of the year, and things can go all over the place. The only team that looks like they're really down and out of it is Firth. You know, 5 points from the first half and negative 36 is oof. You know,
yeah. But even
everybody else can jump around. There's possibilities. So yeah,
12. Even Firth the last couple matches is around. Yeah, even Firth is a couple the last couple matches is shown a little bit of fight, which is a little frightening. Here yeah. I
don't fight against us.
I know, right? I wish the NFL had relegation too, simply because I would love to see Ohio State get bumped into the NFL so that Matt would have something to do every Sunday as the Packers play Ohio State. So for me, that would be, and then maybe we could add it to hockey. Then you two Yahoos could start screaming about Michigan hockey in the NHL or something. So
hey, we promised not to bring it up and you're the one doing it. That's all I'm going to comment there.
Well, I wanted to give the listeners a tease. Future podcast here.
Promotion and relegation everywhere. I'm all for it.
I would love to see US sports go that way. I think it would solve some of the big problems of US sports. It would introduce a whole bunch more drama. Who's not a fan of that?
You know? Yeah, it would definitely be a segment for a completely different podcast or a different conversation, because the biggest difference, once you become a fan of European soccer, of any league, but in particular the Bundesliga, it's hard to look at American sports the same ever again. That whole component of relegation, and unfortunately we've been part of a club that's been relegated twice in the last 5 years, it changes everything. And to say that players care, it sounds like a cliche type of thing, but they simply do. And to wrap this back to our Mark Oliver Kempf thing, I think that's why many of us are like, listen, yeah, Kempf's a good player and he's probably a better player on some statistical measures, but relegation is such a significant moment in not just a club's life, but in a player's life, that if that player isn't fully invested, I just don't know how much they're going to give, you know, to the club. And this is a club in the second half that's going to need a lot, you know, going for it to hopefully get out of 16th place here. So we'll see how it goes. And hopefully when, all said and done and match day 34 is over, we're celebrating another successful season in the Bundesliga, and we can sit you two down at the hockey table and hash it all out there. So hey guys, thanks so much for joining us for this episode. Rob, thanks for popping in, that was a lot of fun.
Matt, yeah, sorry about that, I was not paying attention to my phone like usual.
No, this is like one of those soap operas where the character who you thought died in a plane crash suddenly comes back. So we talked about Days of Our Lives and Young and the Restless. This is perfect for our listening audience. So no, this is great. This is the great guest reveal. So thanks, Rob.
The only thing we were missing is some super dramatic music right before Rob spoke for the first time.
Oh, that. I'll see if I can add that.
You said you don't edit at all, but I mean.
I know. I just said that for the listeners. I'm not going to do it. All right, guys. Speaking of drama, I better close this up before I have some drama at home. So hope you guys have a great one. Thanks again for popping on, and we'll talk to you next time.
Sounds good, guys. Good to talk again.
Thanks, guys.
6 of segment 2 of our Holiday Hinrunda review. We're going to talk to Robin. Now, Robin is actually from Norway, and I know that this is supposed to be for American fans. I shouldn't say for, but by American fans and our thoughts. But in our defense, Robin's Twitter handle has a picture of the Green Bay Packers, so our geography is not too good, and we thought he was from Wisconsin, but that's no big deal. We love Robin's thoughts here. You can reach Robin at Flabby Viking. He sent in a written response to our questions. His origin story is pretty interesting. He says, I got fed up with the corruption going on with the ownership at Arsenal, and I followed Sven to VfB to see him in action with his free reigns in a conscientiously run club. Yeah, that's a fantastic origin story there. Robin, it's really interesting how many Arsenal fans are also VfB Stuttgart fans. I wonder if there's something in the DNA or the blood there. His Hinrunda review in the first half, his one word is regression. And Robin, it's hard not to agree with you there. The club was definitely much higher on the table at the end of the first half last season than they are this season. His report card, he gives the defense and the goalies a C. the midfield a B. The offense gets an E, which, since the grading scale goes A, B, C, D, E, F, that may mean they're barely treading water right there. But Robin, it seems like most of the people we've talked to agree with you that the offense is a little struggling, which, yeah, makes sense. And for coaching for Monterazzo, Robin gives Monterazzo a C, but actually bumped him up, he says, because of all the injuries. So a lot of us are kind of in agreement with that, that Monterazzo is doing a nice job kind of holding the team together and keeping the boat afloat, if you will. Ooh, that rhymed. In terms of player of the Hinrunda, not a lot of surprise here. Robin goes with Arsenal boy Dino, but he says Endo and Ito aren't far behind. Yeah, it's hard to argue with those two. Endo's kind of the engine in the midfield, and Ito's been just such a great surprise for everybody. In terms of the match of the first half of the season, he agrees with one of the earlier people we talked to that the Hoffenheim match, which in part not only because of the win, but he says it was also our sort of derby. He says, quote, with Karlsruhe behind where they are and Freiburg being a club I can't make myself dislike, he chooses the Hoffenheim one. Well, Robin, if you listen to this podcast at all, which it sounds like you have, you know Austin, one of the co-hosts, is a Freiburg fan, so please feel free to dislike him at least, even if you don't dislike his club. For a Christmas gift for VFB, his gift is one I think we're all looking to forward to, is Sasha's return for, and some injury good luck the second half as opposed to all the bad luck here. In terms of the Rookrunda predictions, what kind of rituals does Robin have? He says, quote, I take a shot of Norwegian potato liquor from a VFB shot glass. End quote. I love that tradition, Robin. I used to try to take a little bit of a sip of Stuttgart gin before a VFB match, but since our matches are mostly at 9 a.m. in the States, that tends to be a bad idea. But I like it there. I may have to try that before the Furt match. In terms of the match he's most looking forward to, Robin says the Furt game, because we could just really use a win. I'm with you on this one, Robin. I think this one is key to kind of get us going in a good direction, get some good momentum, get some good vibes. In terms of the most important player for the second half of the season, Sasha followed by Silas. And in terms of why we'll survive, he says simply because of their return. In terms of the table finish, Robin predicts a, drum roll please. Nope, we don't have drum rolls. All right. A 13th place finish, and says from where we are now, he will grab survival with both hands and a huge sigh of relief. I like Robin's last comment, though, is that he says Werl might just be the most important signing off the pitch. If you've heard the news, we've just hired a new CEO to replace Thomas Hitzlsperger, and he comes from Cologne. So hopefully that turns out to be a good signing. I'd love to kind of dive into that a little bit more. So that is Robin's thoughts on how the first half of the season went and how the second half of the season will go. Robin, thanks so much for writing in. Really appreciate your thoughts and really appreciate your origin story as well. So that's going to wrap up our, what is this, segment 2 and part 6. We're hoping to talk to a few more VFB fans in the next few days, and maybe our geography will even be good and they'll be from the States. All right, everybody, thanks so much for listening. Enjoy your day, and we'll talk to you later.